why would a seller go with you if you're going to offer less money? The answer is they like you more. They trust you more. They like being around you more. They like dealing with you more. If somebody likes you, if they trust you, they're more likely to do a deal with you, even if it means a little bit less money.
Welcome to How to Buy Giant Apartment Buildings, the number one show about growing your family's wealth with apartment building investments. Now, here's your host, Mark Allen Kenny.
Hey everybody, welcome to How to Buy Giant Apartment Buildings. I'm Mark Allen Kenny. Our guest today is Jay Scott. How are you doing today, Jay?
Doing great, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Thanks for being on the show. Jay is an entrepreneur, investor, and the co-host of the Bigger Pockets Business Podcast. In the past 10 years, Jay and his wife have bought, built, rehabbed, sold, lent on, and held over $70 million in property all around the country. Jay holds advisory roles in several companies and is the author of 4 books on real estate investing, including the bestseller, The Book on Flipping Houses. Jay, thank you so much for being on the show today. Could you tell the listeners just a little bit about your background and how you got started in real estate?
Yeah. So I was an accidental real estate investor. I started in the tech world. I got my engineering degree in college, got my MBA. I was in the corporate world forever. And back in 2008, my girlfriend at the time and I, both in the tech sector, decided to get married. And we were both working about 80 hours a week, 100 hours a week. She was traveling 3.5 weeks a month. I was traveling a couple weeks a month. And we realized that it just wasn't conducive to starting a family and having the lifestyle that we ultimately wanted. So when we got engaged back in the beginning of 2008 or end of 2007, we decided right away, like, before we get married, we've got to just quit our jobs. We've got to find something else that will allow us to put family and lifestyle first and work kind of take a back seat. So basically a lifestyle type business. Spring of 2008, we quit our jobs. We're going to get married a few months later. We moved from the West Coast to the East Coast and we had no idea what we wanted to do. We had talked about getting into doing some real estate stuff. We'd actually talked about investing in apartment buildings. We also considered businesses, franchises, starting a small business, buying a business. We had no idea. Summer of 2008, my wife and I are watching TV, trying to figure out what we want to do and procrastinating on that decision. And my wife sees an HGTV show on flipping houses and said, let's flip a house while we try and figure out what we want to do. And so long story short, we ended up flipping a house and a second house, third and a 10th and a 50th and a 100th. And here we are 12 years later. And at some point, I guess we turned into full-time real estate investors, though it never was a conscious decision for us. It just sort of happened.
Wow. That's amazing. And in 2008, so that's right when the mortgage crisis is hitting. That's right when all the, you know, shit's hitting the fan, so to speak. So did you find that slowed down your efforts to launch that business, or was it helping? Were you able to find, you know, better deals at that time, or how did the economy affect that launch when you guys were first getting started?
Yeah, this is definitely one of those situations where ignorance was bliss. Had I known more real estate investing, had I been more intelligent or felt like I was more intelligent, I probably would have talked myself out of actually starting. Because as you mentioned, it was 2008. We were in Atlanta, Georgia, which was probably the hardest hit area in the country during the worst real estate recession in at least 100 years. So it was a really, in a lot of ways, it seemed to be a really bad time. Luckily, we knew nothing about real estate investing. And so there was nothing that actually gave us pause. And so turns out that back in 2008, and something we've learned over the years is anytime you do transactional real estate or transactional anything, it's always going to be either a good time to buy or a good time to sell. The market's always either going to favor buyers or sellers. And these days, obviously, we know that the market favors sellers. It's hard to find good deals, but if you can find a good deal, it's really easy to sell it. Back then, it was just the opposite. It was really easy to find a good deal. It was just really tough to sell it. So it's not like the market was any tougher than it is today. It was just tough in a different way. And so again, luckily we didn't know enough to think, maybe we shouldn't do this. We said, let's just do it. And the ease was on the front end, finding a deal. We were able to find good deals, literally throw a dart at the MLS and whatever it hit was probably a good deal. It wasn't until the back end that we saw the struggles, but my wife is great at marketing. She's great at building relationships. She's great at staging and design and making really pretty houses. And so for us, while certainly there were some challenges, it wasn't something that stopped us. And we were able to scale the business, and we were actually able to do a whole lot more deals at lower margin back in 2008, 9, 10, 11 than we're doing today. We're doing a lot fewer deals today, higher margins, but we're not finding as many deals. So again, never the perfect time both to buy and sell. At any point in time, it's going to be one's easy, one's more difficult, and you just have to be flexible, and you have to be good enough at both sides of your business that you can leverage the good and work your way out of the bad.
Yeah. Love that. That's great advice. So how were you able to scale so quickly? Because you know, over 70 million in transactions, you know, you guys have flipped so many homes, especially even in those first years. Did you build a team right away, or was it just the two of you, or what did that look like?
We were fortunate. I mean, this is going to sound strange, but we were fortunate in the sense that we knew nothing about real estate. Literally, we were in our mid-30s and we had just purchased our first house to live in. So literally our first investment property was the second house we ever bought. And it was 3 months after we bought our first house. And I have no contracting skills. I knew nothing about the real estate industry. I knew nothing about financing. I knew nothing about contracting. And so we went in blind. Luckily, the skills that we had were on the business side. So my wife and I both worked for large companies, building businesses within those companies. So from our perspective, from the very beginning, it was very much, how do we run this like a business? I'm never going to get my hands dirty doing swinging a hammer or doing paint or painting or putting in siding or roofing. Like, that was never an option for me. All I knew how to do was run a business. So from my perspective, it's how do we run this business optimally? How do I find the right people to surround myself with? How do I find the right contractors, the right employees? And so for me, the scaling was actually pretty natural because I never got bogged down in the details of the business. I was always focused on growing the business. And as much as I enjoy growing a business, I hate employees. So one of the guiding principles for me was bring in as few full-time employees as necessary, and then surround yourself with great contractors or great part-time employees, great partners. And so for me, we did pull in within the first few months, we pulled in a project manager full time. But for most of the last 12 years, even scaling to 30, 40, 50 houses a year in some of those years, we only had one employee in each of the markets we were working in, and that was our project manager. And we found that for the most part, we could use contractors, partners, part-time employees, virtual assistants, whatever it was, for the bulk of the work that we were doing.
Yeah, I like that. Keeping it lean. So yeah. You guys have done a lot of different types of properties too, everything from single family houses to kind of smaller multifamily. And then I know you said that you did your first apartment syndication this year. Do you have a preference, or is it kind of, you know, whatever looks good on paper and makes sense? Or do you have a kind of a favorite type of deal to do?
It's funny because I do a lot of speaking, and people always ask me, like, should I be doing lots of different things? Should I be focusing on one thing? And my general rule of thumb is, if you're the type of person and you have the personality that you can spend the next 30 years of your life focusing on one thing and getting better at it than any person on the planet, you're going to be more successful than somebody like me who gets bored really easily and goes from thing to thing to thing. I wish I had the personality where I could, like, just focus on something for so long that I literally become the best person in the world at it. Fortunately, that's just not my personality, and I need to recognize that. But what I do tell people and what I do myself is, whatever I do, I will focus on it long enough that I get good enough at it that I can kind of add it to my bag of tricks. I can go back to it anytime I want. I'm comfortable with it. I'm a big fan of the 80-20 rule. So 20% of the work is going to result in 80% of the output. And so if you try and get past 80% of the output, you're getting into thin margins and thin return on your time. So I try and get to that 80% knowledge, 80% proficiency, 80% understanding of anything I do. So like with flipping houses, I spent 5 years flipping houses before I moved on to anything else. And by the time I moved on to the next niche in investing, I was good enough at flipping houses that I could always come back to it. I could always rely on those skills. From there, I moved into buy and hold. From there, I moved into some lending and some notes. And as you mentioned just earlier this year, I partnered up with a friend of mine and a great team to do our first multifamily syndication. So 2020 and probably for the next couple of years, that's going to kind of be my focus until I'm good enough at that, that I can add it to my bag of tricks, at which point I'll probably get bored and I'll move on. And but the nice thing is, because I spent years doing the flips, I spent years doing the rentals, I spent years doing the lending and the notes, I can always go back to those. So I can identify good deals and good opportunities when they arise, and I can kind of pick and choose opportunities. So too many people, I think they're like me, they get bored easily, but they get shiny object syndrome. They jump from one thing to another without getting really proficient in the thing they're working on. So I guess my advice to anybody is, one, if you can be laser focused for the next 10, 20, 30 years, go for it. If you can't, at least force yourself to be focused enough that you build a proficiency in whatever you're doing before you move on.
Sure, sure. What can I get your thoughts on syndication? And you know, if that's the new kind of venture, I'm sure you're kind of excited about it and looking forward to diving in there. What kind of drove you to doing that first syndication project? And what are you kind of excited about moving forward?
Yeah. So I like to tell people that we all have different personalities. We all have different skill sets. We all have different resources. In real estate investing, typically, and my friend Charles Yarber likes to say, there are three things we need to be a successful real estate investor and probably successful in any business. And that's time, money, and expertise. The nice thing is you don't need all three of those yourself. You can surround yourself with people that can bring some of those. So I like to tell people, take stock of what you have. Do you have lots of time, but you don't have money or expertise? Do you have lots of expertise, but you don't have time or money? Maybe you have money, but you don't have time or expertise. Maybe you have a fantastic network. Figure out what you have and then pick the style of investing that's most suitable based on the resources you have. I see a lot of people that want to go into note investing, for example, but they don't have any cash. Note investing is kind of tough without cash. I see a lot of people that want to go into multifamily syndication. It's kind of tough to go into syndication if you don't have a network, if you don't have a reputation, because you rely on people to bring you you bring you cash and investments. And for that, you need a network. You need people that trust you. You need a reputation. So for me, I like to take stock of what I have. And this year was like, it was the right time to move into syndication because I finally felt like I had that network of people that trusted me, that were willing to invest in me, that wanted to invest in me. I had the team surrounding me. And I had the time and focus to kind of move into that area of investing. Whereas before, I didn't feel like I had the core skills. I didn't have the network. I didn't have necessarily the reputation. So for me, it just was the right time to move into syndication. And so, yeah, so I'm really excited about getting into it and looking to scale it over the next couple of years.
Yeah, that's awesome. It makes sense that you've got a great network with your podcast, the Bigger Pockets Business Podcast. Could we talk about that just a little bit? What kind of what, sure. what's the premise of the show and what are the kind of topics that you guys discuss?
Yeah, so Bigger Pockets came to me a couple years ago and said, hey, we'd love you to do a podcast. I said, it's not really my thing. What do you think? And they said, well, you're a house flipper and you're an investor. Let's talk about flipping houses or some other type of real estate. And I said, look, I do lots of podcasts. I talk about flipping houses every day. Honestly, it's not that interesting to me. And they said, well, what would be interesting? And again, I come from a business background. We've been successful in real estate because my wife and I have a good business background. And one of the things that, I mean, you asked earlier what we attribute some of our success and scaling to, and it's the fact that we treat our business like a business. We don't treat it like a hobby. We don't treat it like a side hustle, if you want to use that term. For us, it very much is a business, just like any other. It relies on the same skills. You need to be able to market. You need to be able to sell. You need to be able to build an acquisition pipeline. You need to understand operations, supply chain management, all of these things. Real estate really is a business, and too many people don't think of it as such. And so when Bigger Pockets said to me, what would you like to talk about? I said, well, look, I would love to talk about business because I think there are lessons for the audience. One, a lot of real estate investors want to get into other businesses besides real estate. So maybe you want to be a passive investor. Maybe you want to do buy and hold. Maybe you want to invest in syndications, but you need the active income to do that. Or maybe you want to flip houses, but you still need cash to do that. Well, a lot of real estate investors are getting that cash, getting that active income through either starting their own businesses or partnering in businesses or buying businesses. And then once you're actually doing real estate, to scale your real estate business, you have to understand business in general. So I thought it would be really interesting to kind of talk to business owners. So we talk to entrepreneurs, everything from like brand new startup entrepreneurs all the way up through, we had Barbara Corcoran on the show, for example. So from Shark Tank, she's one of the sharks from Shark Tank. So we kind of hit the full gamut. And so our guests come on and they basically teach our listeners about how to start, grow, scale, build a business. And so I think for real estate investors, it's a really important topic. Even if you don't want to build a non-real estate business, understanding the principles of building a business will allow you to grow your real estate business as much as anything else.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think one really important business skill is negotiating. And I'm reading your book right now, the book on negotiating real estate. And I love it. I have to say it's super insightful. It's actually helped me quite a bit with a couple of things I'm working on. So one thing that resonated me with the book was the idea that it's not always about price that motivates people, whether that's a seller or a buyer. Could you speak to that a little bit and maybe give an example of something other than price that helps with negotiations?
Yeah. And so first, let me start with, in a lot of cases, especially in real estate, price is going to be the driving factor. I mean, we like to think if we're the best negotiators in the world, we can get somebody to come off their $200,000 price tag down to $100,000 by being creative or by doing other things. The reality is 90, 95% of the time, we're not going to be able to do that. Not very large percentage of the time, one or both sides, parties in a transaction, are going to be strictly motivated by money. So we have to understand that first of all. But the nice thing is, if you can turn the tide in the other 1% or 2% or 5% or 10% of transactions, that can drive the growth of your business exponentially. Mm-hmm. So don't think that being creative is going to get you 100% of transactions done. It may only help you in a few percent of your transactions, but as real estate investors, we're looking at numbers, we're looking at scale, we're looking at making 50 or 100 or 500 offers in a year. So being able to turn the tides in a couple percentage points of our deals is going to make a big difference. And so to your point, many times, price isn't the driving factor. We always assume it is because as real estate investors, it typically is for us. We typically look at what is the maximum we can pay for a deal to hit our margins. And so as humans, we naturally think, well, other people are just like us. If all we care about is money, all the other people care about is money. But in reality, humans are complex, they're diverse, they have different personalities and different goals and different driving forces. And so for a lot of people, that money is just not the prime objective. And so the key to strong negotiation is really it's in building a relationship, understanding the other person, and figuring out what those motivating factors are. So I've talked to sellers, literally, I had a seller a couple years ago. This one kind of stands out when it comes to this question. I had a seller a couple years ago. I was talking to her. My wife built a relationship with her. They talked over a couple months and we kept saying, hey, we'd love to talk to you about buying your house. And she was just never ready. And one day my wife just sat down and said, look, let's talk. What's going on? And just after a normal conversation, it came out that this woman had lived in her house. She grew up in this house. She had lived in this house for 50, 60 years. I don't know what the exact time was. And she said, look, I don't know how to move. I don't know where I'm going to go. I don't know what I'm going to do with my stuff. I know I have to hire movers, but I have to pack. And I don't like that whole process terrifies me. And my wife said, well, what if we found somebody that could help you pack? What if we found movers that could take your stuff to wherever you want to go? We'll help you find another place. We'll help you buy another place, whatever it is. And it turns out that was what she was scared of. It wasn't that we weren't offering her enough money. It was that she didn't know the next steps to sell us the house and then actually find another place to live. She was done with this house. It was in disrepair. She couldn't keep up with it, but she just didn't know anything else. And as soon as we figured out what her core motivation was, which was figuring out how to get from this house to another house and all the logistics involved, once we realized that was the issue, it ended up being a $5,000 or $10,000 problem that we could solve by bringing in a good real estate agent to help her find another house, bringing in a good set of movers to pack her up and get her stuff onto a truck into the other house. And at the end of the day, we made the deal and we got a great deal out of it because she didn't care about the money. She cared about the logistics and the process. That's what mattered to her. And that was the motivating factor. I'm ashamed that it took us months to get to the point to realize that. But by the time we did get there, I mean, ultimately, it ended up being a win-win.
Wow. Yeah. Do you have any advice or insight for how to kind of build that relationship, create rapport, and kind of uncover some of those core motivations that, that sellers might have?
It's going to sound trite, but honestly, it's holding conversations. It's being a human being. And I think too often, because it's not some secret or it's not some, it's not something that we can easily teach how to be a human being. It's not often covered in negotiating books. But at the end of the day, 90% of negotiation is really just building a relationship, building rapport, building trust. In today's world, if you're reaching out to a seller, most likely there are 30 other investors reaching out to that same seller. And most likely one of them is going to offer more money than you are. Why would a seller go with you if you're going to offer less money? The answer is they like you more. They trust you more. They like being around you more. They like dealing with you more. If somebody likes you, if they trust you, they're more likely to do a deal with you, even if it means a little bit less money. I'm sure we can all relate to this. I'm sure there are people that you've done deals with where you thought, I would have done that deal with that person for $10,000 less because the transaction was so simple, because I never had to stress over it. I like working with them. Every time I saw they were calling, I wasn't scared to pick up the phone because I didn't have to worry about being yelled at or have some problem. I didn't have to worry about dealing with the title company or inspectors or appraisers because they were always on top of that. I mean, we all know people that we've dealt with who just take care of things and make things easy and who we can trust. And we're willing to give up some money to deal with those people. And at the end of the day, that's what negotiation is. Building rapport, building trust, building a relationship so that somebody wants to deal with you and is willing to give up something, whether it's money, whether it's time, whether it's control, to work with you as opposed to somebody else.
It's that time of the show for a segment called Best Deal, Worst Deal, where we talk about real estate transactions that you've done in the past so that others can learn from your knowledge and expertise. So Jay, with that said, what's the best real estate deal that you've done?
The first one, I did a deal and we looked at probably 100 houses before we pulled the trigger on the first one. Luckily, my wife is smarter than I am. And so after looking at about 100 houses, and we were looking with a wholesaler who in retrospect probably didn't have, well, wholesalers rarely have their buyer's best interest in mind. At the time, we thought he did, and obviously he didn't, but at the time, we had no idea. And so we kept looking at houses, and I was just scared to pull the trigger. And one day, my wife said, look, this is getting ridiculous. We've looked at 100 houses. We haven't made any offers. Next house we see, we're gonna buy. And so next house we saw, which turned out to be a really bad deal. My wife said, doesn't matter. We're buying this house. And if we lose a little money, we lose a little money, but at least we're going to take action. At least we're going to move forward. And so that kind of got us over the hump of doing the first deal. I like to say my one secret I found in this business, and there's no secrets in this business, but the closest I've come to a secret in this business is that you meet two types of real estate investors. You meet most people who have never done a deal. They want to do a deal. They say they're going to do a deal, but they've never done a deal. And then second type of people that you meet are those that have done lots of deals. The type of person you never meet in this business is somebody who's done one deal. And the reason for that is if you can do that one deal, you're going to do a second and a third and a fifth and a tenth. Getting over the hump of the first deal is hard, but getting from one to two or two to three or three to five, that's really, really easy. Mm-hmm. So the key in this business is get that first deal come hell or high water. And if you can do that, you're golden. You're going to get your second and your fifth and your 10th and your 50th eventually. So for me, getting that first deal was kind of the opening the floodgates to everything we've done since.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. And what would you say is the worst deal that you've done?
My first deal. am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
In terms of the numbers, in terms of the deal, my first deal was probably one of the worst. Again, I credit it with all the success or most of the success we've had over the last 12 years, but to a large extent, it was a really bad deal. So we overpaid for the property. We underestimated the rehab costs. It cost us more to rehab. In fact, we ended up holding the property for 2.5 years because we couldn't sell it. So we had to do two full rehabs. We overestimated our resale value. And we obviously underestimated our holding time. We thought we were going to be able to do it in 3 or 4 months. Ended up being 2.5 years. So we made a mistake literally in every part of the process. Purchase price, rehab costs, holding time, and selling price. We screwed up all four. The nice thing was that we were ultra conservative at the time. And it really was a buyer's market. So we got in cheap enough that 2.5 years later, after doing a lease option that failed and having to do a second rehab, we actually made $1,200 on the deal. So it was probably one of our worst deals ever. It was probably one of the most stressful and difficult deals we've ever done. But another lesson we learned on that first deal was always be ultra conservative, because even though we made every mistake in the book, we eked out a little bit of a profit on it.
Yeah. Awesome. That makes sense. So Jay, we're pretty short on time here, but I just want to ask one final question. With the economy today, with everything going on, COVID, you know, a possible recession, if you were starting over today or someone's just getting started in real estate, you know, you've done everything from single family house flips to apartment syndications, what would you suggest as the best path with, you know, taking into account the economy right now?
Two types of real estate, in if you put them in broad buckets. One is transactional, where you buy and then you sell, and hopefully you sell for more than you bought for, and you make a profit. The other is buy and hold, where you're buying for cash flow or appreciation or tax benefits or amortization, whatever your reason for buying is, but you're holding long term and you're getting long term benefits. In a good economy, transactional real estate can be very successful. Anybody that's bought between 2010 and 2020 has seen that transactional real estate can be a great way to make money, because the market's going up. And even if you make mistakes, the market's going to correct for those mistakes because it's appreciating. When the economy gets tough, and I don't think we've seen it yet, but my gut tells me that once the stimulus runs out, once the eviction moratoriums end, once the forbearances end, at some point over the next 3 to 6 months, we're going to see a softening in the market. When you see a softening economy, when you see a less stable economy, that's the time to get away from transactional real estate and to move into more buy and hold real estate. And so at this point in the market cycle, I recommend anybody that's starting out now focuses on buy and hold. And whether that's buy and hold single family, whether that's buy and hold multifamily. And again, if you're doing syndications are somewhere in between transactional and buy and hold. Anybody that's doing syndications, focus on the buy and hold aspect. Make sure you model out, instead of just modeling 3 to 5 years, model out 7 years and 10 years, because in a worst case, you have a downturn that lasts a couple years. So be conservative in your modeling and treat it more like a buy and hold than a transactional deal. But you could also be buying and holding mobile homes or mobile home parks. You can be buying and holding notes, non-performing or performing notes. I might want to stay away from performing these days, but there's some good deals in non-performing notes. Maybe you're buying and holding a class of commercial assets that are likely to do well. Whatever you're doing, focus on the buy and hold aspects. Don't focus on the transactional aspects, because anytime you have a softening economy, you can get caught in that downturn, and transactional just isn't the place to be.
Yeah. Awesome. Great advice. Jay, where can others go to connect with you and learn more about what you're up to?
So probably the best place to start is connectwithjscott.com, just the letter J, and that'll link out to kind of everything people might be interested in finding out about me.
Awesome. Well, Jay, thanks for taking the time today. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Mark.
Hey, everybody. It's Mark Allen Kenny. If you're interested in apartment building investments, schedule a call with me so we can have a chance to chat. My company is focused on growing your family's wealth with apartment building investments. So let's hop on a quick call and talk about your investment goals and see if we're a good fit. Find out more at stellarinvestmentgroup.com.